back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is getting back out on the road, presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to be giving away Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. I have not had any reports of winners from El Guapo last week, but I'm sure there were some because they gave a lot of tickets away. I'll be giving away the rest of my stack this week at Costas on Friday during March Madness from 2 to 5. Got great guests. Marianne Scully's coming by. Mike Rosenfeld's coming by. Rob Santoni's coming by from Wise Markets. So it's going to be a big hootenanny down in Dundalk. And then on Wednesday of next week, we're going to be at Fadley's, and I'm wearing my Fadley shirt. Surprise, it still fits. I think I'm picking up some winter weight because I'm eating too much, probably too much Wise ice cream and too many crab cakes. And we'll be at Fadley's next week. So come on down, get some mac and cheese. I'll fatten you up, get some delicious little tomatoes with my crab cake. I'm having a couple of crab cakes this week. This guy's had crab cakes, and I love how serendipity brings people to my show. I've had kind of a weird week in a lot of ways. We've talked jazz. We've talked about juice bars. We've talked about war. We've talked about football free agency, baseball lockouts. This guy has a great name. It's a great March Madness name. I had Ian O'Connor on a couple of weeks ago talking about Mike Krzyzewski his departure from Duke. This guy is actually in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. His name is Dean Smith, but he's not that Dean Smith or related to that Dean Smith. And this segment, believe it or not, is going to be about poetry and Baltimore. And it's all because of Jack Gilden. Dean Smith, Dean Bartoli Smith, we welcome you on in advance of first off, dude, you're a poet. I don't have a lot of poets on the show. I had a writer on. I had Marian Crotty on last week. We talked about poetry. And I'm a writer by trade. My, you know, when I die, it'll say writer on my tomb, but like, I've never written a poem and I don't even know where I'd start. So I don't know how you found your way to me, but I was literally talking about poetry last week and saying, maybe we ought to get a poet on the show. So here you are, Dean Smith.
Well, thank you very much. And it's great to be here and to finally connect with you. I've admired your work for a long time and loved your book about the Super Bowl season. And
which
for
one?
Purple Rain 2 was the first one I read, and then cool. I went back and read
that was
Purple
the better
Rain 1.
One. Yeah, Purple Rain 2 is the better book, but dang, I appreciate it, man.
Well, it was great. And so for poetry, for me, is just a way to tell stories. I kind of just don't have the patience to write long form, and I need to – it's like mowing the lawn. I need to do some writing, tell a story, and then get out and go do something else.
You say you don't have the patience to write long form. If I told Marion this week, she's like a professor of this, at Loyola. I said, if you give me an assignment, tell me I have to write a poem by the end of the week. Dude, I don't know. I'd be way better if you said, give me 10,000 words on the history of Memorial Stadium. I could go do that right now. You know what I mean? And I am long winded. I am really, you read my book. I'm long winded. I needed an editor for the second book. But poetry, I don't know where to begin or end. Where would I start? Let's start with that. And I want to get the Baltimore Suns so we can sort of roll this in. But where would one start to write poetry? Where did you start?
So for me, my mom was a poet and my grandmother. My mom was Italian. My grandmother was Irish. So it was a kind of, for me, that a natural bipolarism.
So a lot of sad poetry is what you're telling us.
Exactly. And, but, you know, I went to University of Virginia and I encountered Sylvia Plath, Robert Lowell, Ezra Pound. I mean, Robert Lowell's book, Life Studies, is just like prose. And I was like, wow, this isn't like the Shakespeare or any of the other poets that I knew. And I was like, I didn't know you could even do this. Like, you could write free verse. You could kind of tell stories with poetry. You just got a few more things that, you know, that are in play, you know, form, stanzas, language, but you can make it interesting. There's an Irish poet called Paul Muldoon who was really good at telling stories. There's a poem called Meeting the British, where the ending of that poem is, you know, between the Indians and the French, the last two lines are, they gave us six fish hooks and we gave them blankets full of smallpox. And that, those two lines for me kind of just, okay, that's kind of what I want to do, is to try and tell those kind of stories. And, you know, that, you know, in terms of social justice, in terms of those kind of things, using language to kind of make a cultural response is, and I've, you know, I've, this took 20 years to finish this book. took 15 years to finish the first one. So I'm not moving at a quick pace on these things.
Well, you have a different gig, right? So you're at Duke, right? You're a guy with the name Dean Smith, who literally has a Duke email address. You are the director of the Duke University Press, right?
Yes.
What is the Duke University Press, and how is that related to Baltimore Suns, which is your poetic project about, like, quite frankly, I'm looking at all the titles of these. It all kind of has to do with Baltimore, right?
No, exactly. So I can do a couple of things well. That's how I talk about it. I could write a little bit. I can talk a little bit. I can't do math or science or any of that stuff. So I try to keep focused on doing a couple of things well. And, you know, Baltimore's in my heart. Like, it's in your heart. Like, you just never leave it. And
now, what's your background in Baltimore? Give me the thumbnail on how a Baltimore kid winds up at Duke.
Born and raised, first 16 years, left Loyola High School in the middle to move to Chicago with my mother and stepfather. My parents were divorced when I was 7, and we were living in Courthouse Square. Both sets of grandparents lived in the city. They kind of raised me. So my grandmother, Carolyn Bartoli, she ran a beauty salon in her basement. So I'd go down there and listen to the stories right at Harford Road, Harford and Oak Forest Lane, right there, the first house. And right next to that, the Colony Movie Theater. So I spent a lot of time being kind of raised by my grandparents. My grandfather took an early disability from Bethlehem Steel. He had a nervous breakdown working the night shift as a yard master. Wow. Guys were getting hurt. But what worked out for me is that he kind of stepped in when my dad went to coach basketball in Wheeling with a guy named Paul Baker. I don't know if you remember Paul Baker.
I knew Paul. Paul came up last week. Paul comes up every year, college basketball season. PG was a legend, man, a legend.
Yeah, so my dad coached with him at Wheeling, first at University of Baltimore and then at Wheeling, and then he left from the time I was 8 to the time I was 12. So I started playing basketball as much as I could and ended up playing in high school. But my grandfather was there, baseball too, you know, wearing number 5, playing third base for like the Cockeysville Optimists, playing in the, you know, we lived in Cockeysville, but I spent a ton of time with my grandparents. But he was there for me, and he played AAA ball in Pennsylvania, so in Shikshinny, PA. And so he taught me how to hit, you know, basically it was like swing level hit line drives, not lift your arm, not do anything else. I mean, in the backyard, my grandmother would be making sauce, doing hair. And I'd be sitting down there just listening to those ladies talk. And
dude, you're like a John Waters piece, aren't you? Right? Like literally, right? That neighborhood, right? Literally.
No, exactly. And it was, but I think it was like $2 for a wash and a set. And she just sort of ran the show down there.
Hey,
she
man,
was,
Northeast Baltimore. Yeah. My grandmother made pizza with Gulf Street in Colgate, you know, in the basement. And everybody tells me about it. Told me it's the best pizza ever. I don't, you know, what do I know? It was 1961 or whatever, right?
Yeah, your clothes are on the line, the smell of basil roasting in the sun, you know, that was, we played wiffle ball, curveball, you probably played hours of curveball. My uncle, he was in the softball circuit, Bernie Bartoli, he taught me all of that, how to play curveball. We just sit there and do that for hours or play baseball or do, you know, back when kids, you left the house and never came back, so.
Well, you have a book of poetry, but this is a lifetime of work. Of writing poetry about Baltimore, right? Like, and I guess I've never left, right? And I sort of famously, when I worked at the Sun, all I ever thought I was going to do was leave and go work somewhere else. And even when I was nationally syndicated, they tried to get me to move to Northbrook, Illinois, but I never left. I still have never left. I'm still here, right? I when people like you leave, people that leave and go teach places and go aspire to some bigger, better life somewhere else, and they fly home, the first thing they do is go to Costas and get a crab cake, or go to Fadley's, wherever their favorite thing is when they get home. They talk about crabs, crab cakes, the Orioles. When the Orioles were the Orioles, they don't talk about that anymore, but they used to. People our age would. But when you leave, there's some romance about it that I've never experienced because I've never been gone. You know what I mean? I've been gone weeks at a time. I've been all over the world. I love to travel. I love to get away. But I always come home to it. I've never left it and looked at it in the rearview mirror and thought, I might not go back to Baltimore, and how that would make me feel and feel wistful about it had I left here 25 years ago. And be writing to the ex-girlfriend you didn't marry because you didn't live here. You lived somewhere else. You found a different life. But there's something about coming home, or dare I say home, to Baltimore.
No, absolutely. So I got to come back in 2010 to work for Hopkins, which put me on the path that I ended up in Duke. And I lived in the city, and I had never, you know, had sort of with, been with my parents, but never officially lived in the city. So,
but you had been gone from other than visiting, right? You had not lived here for.
Yes, exactly. But you know, I was in New York City for a while, then Northern Virginia. So I would come back and see. My dad lived at Lake and Charles, so I would do, you know, kind of come back and
go to an Oriole game, do all that, right?
Absolutely, you know, yeah. And you know, behind Hopkins is this weird street called Love Grove Street, and it literally goes from behind Johns Hopkins University Press all the way down to the, you know, and just, it's an alley, right? And it just like, so I'd walk that. There are things that you know how to do in Baltimore that even Baltimoreans don't do. You know, you're walking.
I find that Baltimoreans are incredibly provincial, and it's gotten way, way worse with racism and Trump and the county versus the city. I had Johnny O on last week with Jane Miller. We were talking about that. Literally, Jane Miller said, stop talking bad about the city and come back and spend time. And I lived downtown for 19 years, but the plague made me find things that I found out how provincial I was. I mean, I didn't know Patterson Park had a pond. Like literally did not know that until I was 51 years old. And I had spent my entire life driving on both sides of that park without ever walking through that park. And the
I remember a BNBL game I played in that bubble back, or there's a gym right there back in like, I don't know, 76 or 77.
You mean ice hockey in the bubble?
Something. There's a gym right near there too. But I remember leaving and, you know, watching this fight in the street where somebody was throwing actually a bike at someone who had a baseball bat. And I was like, that's Baltimore, you know, like that's, you know, and
you write poems from this stuff, right?
Yeah, no, I was like, I got to see that pretty much, you know, if you know, ball bat was the term, you know, like there wasn't, you're not going to see anything like that. But, you know, all the churches, that neighborhood that was around where I lived, where I used to walk. So Memorial Stadium for me was like child of divorce. Like if I got to go there, that would like wipe everything away for 3 hours. I wouldn't think about anything related to any of the strife I was experiencing.
What era is this? I haven't figured out how old you are. What era?
So I'm 58.
Okay,
58.
So you're 5 years older than me. So, I mean, that kind of places it in your childhood that you're right in the wheelhouse to maybe remember 70, 71, that era, right?
I was there for McNally's Grand Slam. I was in the upper deck behind home plate, and that was the greatest game I've ever seen, like still to this day. Like, you know, you were afraid of the Reds going in, right? You were, you know, as I was, I had the batting lineup memorized at the age of 6 or 7. I got out of school at Pleasant Plains. My dad picked me up. It was like one of the first things after, like, how's life going to be after the divorce? And, you know, we're there. There's a guy had a heart attack 9 rows down from us and died. I think that was on the New York Post or something. But, you know, you have Brooks in the first inning doing amazing things. And then McNally gets up. And I had for years thought, I didn't realize he batted. He was a left-handed pitcher, but he batted right. And that
well, it's the perfect time for you to bring this up because he can never do that ever again because they're taking the DH. Yeah, finally. It only took him 50 years, but they finally get rid of it, right?
Yeah, but that was, you know, so that all of those and those from the 70s where you were there and the team would be 7 or 8 games out in August and like Lee May would just will balls over the fence. I mean, the crowd would get going in the seventh and how many seventh inning comebacks those teams had. And, you know, in the bleachers, you know, you're nibbling those cups and, you know, the wax off the edge of those cups and the way the Coca-Cola tasted there. I just love that place. I dream about that place.
I thought the 7-Up was better there. It was sweeter.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, it's more syrup. Yeah.
Too. Yeah. The bees liked it. Dean Smith is here. Not that Dean Smith. Dean Bartoli Smith, who has written a book called, not a book, a book of poems, I should say. Baltimore Sons. He is a son of Baltimore who is, I mean, get this straight. I'm going to, so I make this Dean Smith of Duke University Press in Durham, but not that other Dean Smith. By the way, I had that Dean Smith on the show once, and I really thought that I was going to share the picture because it's funny. I look down on my calendar. Dean Smith's coming on. I'm like, yeah, Dean, like Dean Wormer, right? And I'm like, great. And I have to get a Dean Smith line in, but you've had this name for 58 years. I would think that during the 80s and 90s, right? Like Dean Smith, the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Dean Smith's an interesting name, right?
Oh, no. So absolutely. So a couple real quick stories about that. So I was at – my dad coached at UMBC the first teams that they – with Billy Jones, the first couple of teams that went to the NCAAs. And at halftime of one of those games, I came out I was a sophomore in high school to try and make a half-court shot, which I made. And it was $50.
Yeah.
$50 to the bookstore. Can you imagine that? Half-court shot. I just threw it like a baseball. I don't know how it went in, but it did. Okay, a couple of years later, I'm a sophomore in college. I get called down to shoot three free throws in U-Hall, University Hall at University of Virginia. $100 a shot. I miss all three. Because I get up there and the guy says,
did Ralph Sampson make you nervous or something? Or who was staring at you?
You are not going to believe this person's name was what the announcer said. And then everyone stood on their feet and booed.
Oh, dude. They gave your name in Virginia?
Yeah, because Terry Holland had a dog.
Who were they playing that night? Who were they playing?
It was like Fairfield. It was like their tournament.
Game. Okay.
It was like it was over Thanksgiving break.
Okay. It was even earlier than that.
Yeah. So they, so I had, that was
right after Athletes in Action came through, right?
And that was the end of my basketball career right there.
Yeah, exactly.
That was it.
Dean Smith is here. So, I had Dean on my show one time in my life. And it was at Madison Square Garden. It's like one of the greatest nights of my life. And I'll even tell the story because I went to New York 2 weeks ago to see John Mayer right before he got COVID. And I was at the Garden. And the Garden's just a special place. But you walk around and there's these plaques for every special thing. Frasier Ali, concerts, U2, Sinatra, Rangers, Knicks, Patrick Ewing. It's everywhere, right? But this night was the 75th anniversary of Sports Illustrated. I told the story with Andy Mueller a couple months ago on my 30th anniversary because it's still one of the greatest nights ever. They set me up at the Garden, and I was doing a nationally syndicated show, but I was doing my own thing too. And one night I had like Mike Arruzioni, Martina Navratilova, Jim Brown, Roger Clemens. I'm trying to think of all the people that came through because it was a Sports Illustrated. Ali was there that night. He was alive. Young Tiger Woods. Kareem was there, it was the greatest athletes of the set. Bjorn Borg was there. It was crazy, right? So I had all of these great guests, but Dean Smith, just one of all these people that Sir Roger Bannister sat and talked to me about running fast. Like, it was amazing. It was a crazy. I had Bonnie Blair and Scott Hamilton at the same time. It was a nutty night, right? George Foreman sat down. Like, it was nuts. But Dean Smith's one of these. I've never shared the picture. I have the audio. I've run the audio on the air. I had like 6 minutes with Dean Smith. And I probably said to him something like this. Coach Smith, do you hate Duke as much as I do? It's probably like one of those kinds of things. But what's it been like to have that name like at Duke, right? I mean, you got booed at Virginia. This sets you on a different path in your life, Dean Smith.
Well, so they kind of have fun with it. There was some listserv activity when I started, and I'm not a Duke fan. I'm still a Virginia fan. So, but I could probably get a job here just based on if anything happened, I could do anything with that name. But people still remember it, and then actually, Nestor, they think he's still alive. Some people so. I've had real estate agents say, hey, I saw him last week. Now, I don't know if they meant it was his hologram or what, but that's kind of some resonance that, we're not going to have that.
I'll tell you this, Krzyzewski, with what you've experienced down at Duke here the last couple of weeks, it's been truly a coronation in a lot of ways and probably, rightfully so given – but 40 years of this, right? But where you are, and I flew to Raleigh. I was at the Eagles concert at Raleigh, PNC, about a week and a half ago. I flew down for that show, and and my cousin picked me up, and we went to downtown Raleigh. And there's Durham, and there's Chapel Hill. It really you have to spend time down there, and I have to really kind of appreciate what all of that represents, what sports and basketball and universities that is, it's very, very fertile there for all of that, right? It's probably,
it's almost like one campus, right? Yeah. It's almost like one campus. I mean, you have that great story about, the secret game where, the players from Duke in 1944 played against the players from North Carolina Central. And, You know, there's such a lot of basketball history, some great high school basketball. Durham to me looks a lot like Baltimore in spots. There's a play part that looks like Northern Parkway. So there's much more of a kind of a city feel to that. Raleigh, I like Raleigh. I'm not a State fan, so I don't spend a lot of time in Raleigh. Never been a State fan since they destroyed.
They had a beautiful outdoor a concert Maryland. Venue downtown that I didn't even know great. Existed, literally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, I think there are more and more people moving here because of, especially after the pandemic. So there's been a lot of migration here with
the triangle.
With companies. Yeah, you know, so, but it's, you know, the history is amazing. So you have Duke, which is basically this one family that through tobacco and some other things built this, you know, this kind of Harvard of the South. And, you know, UNC is its own sort of, has its own, it's only 9 miles apart. But, you know, I was sort of surprised that the coaches weren't shaking hands after that game, his last game. And, you know, that seems to me to be a kind of a missed opportunity for Nolan Smith to look at Hubert Davis and say, you know what? I applaud you, dude, because and I feel like saying to Nolan, you know, Hubert was playing for the Knicks when you were the same age. So,
you know, perspective on all of this. But I mean, that's what writers try to do. And I think for you and talking about leaving Baltimore and writing about you've already said your grandfather worked at the Point. My dad worked at the Point for 30 years. You know, my father certainly, you know, died with mesothelioma and like all the stuff that Angelos did. We didn't know about that in 1992, right?
Right.
But, you know, but when you had these images of Baltimore sort of burnished in your mind and you are a poet, I would think it's a go-to thing to write about these experiences. I mean, I've done a whole life inside of Baltimore, loving Baltimore, finding its warts, finding its great spots and all that, but leaving it's a different thing and writing sort of love letters to Baltimore, sort of, kind of, right?
Absolutely. You know, and it's sort of like, you know, the state to me is shaped like a crab in some ways. Like there are two kind of claws coming down. And I kind of approach this thing as like sifting through the plankton to kind of find that little piece of stained glass or that little thing that I remember about growing up, that it's my muse for sure. You know, I mean, I would never trade it. I probably can't write about anything else because I'd only want to write about what I know about. And that's something I know about. And it's probably a lifetime of longing to get back there. So that's probably, you know, I could see you getting back there at some point.
You got the good life down there. It's 4.5 hours and I got the flight for $39, dude. Dean Bartoli Smith, the book is Baltimore Suns from Stillhouse Press. It was published a couple months ago. It's a poetic memoir dealing with many of the burning issues facing the city right now. I'm sure we could go back and forth about all sorts of things, but on the sports side and sort of to end this, I should tell you that, and my wife and I met in 2003. So I guess the last time I stood in the stadium for a football game was in 98, right? I couldn't drive past the stadium without getting weepy for years. My father, my childhood, the last game, October 6th, 1991, the Flanagan pitch. And then Flanagan and I spent the rest of his life as close friends. And so going by Memorial Stadium really kind of screwed me up. I'm better with it now. I went out there probably 2008 or 9, and Brooks and Cal were there simultaneously doing the YMCA thing. I've had John Hoey on. I can drive down 33rd Street now, but I swear to you, there was a decade, like literally a good decade from 99 and when they let it sort of half sit up there and we're walking through the weeds and there's that picture of Unitas out there in the middle of the mess at the end, that it broke me for a long time. And I know for you, you see that as sort of a centerpiece for Baltimore in some way for your book.
Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of, if you think also about the sort of geography of the city, that was where the heart is. In a body, like that was where the kind of, that was the city's heart to me. And that fabric was sort of torn apart to some degree. And, you know, that's my feeling, that's probably not everyone's, but that was a place where everyone came together.
I don't think you're inaccurate for a guy my age that's lived through it all. I'd say that's sort of poetic, Dean.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't it wasn't the greatest stadium. It wasn't, you know, from a, you know, physical appearance or whatever, but I've never been in a louder place in my life. That's what I want to say. Never, I've never heard a crowd cheer louder than there. I don't know about you.
In 2006, I don't know. I actually put pieces of this up. When I did the walkout on Angelos back in 06, a labor of love that I'm still very proud of, quite frankly, I'll never not be proud of that. It's been 16 years now, right? But I wrote a book about my father. I wrote 19 chapters about my love of baseball and how baseball brought it all together in my life. And the reason I'm here, the reason this exists, the reason my last name's Aparicio, and I later learned after Frank Robinson died that, you know, all Louis really wanted to do was get his family here from Venezuela in the 60s. So, I feel what you're saying in a big way in regard to Memorial Stadium being the soul. And something that was a rallying point for football and basketball, or baseball and black and white and East and West, it brought people together in a way that, you know, Camden Yards is a big empty on that. You know, 30 years in, I think we can say that, you know, it does not contain that mojo, you know, that magical thing, that fairy dust that Memorial Stadium had for so many of us.
Oh, exactly. And I like to think about like Babe Ruth and Edgar Allan Poe having a discussion in there sometimes, you know, like, hey, what's going on? I wrote something about that once because it was so close to their neighborhoods. And, you know, I love going to see games there too, but it's different. And, but I hope the team can come back. I sort of like what they're doing. And Flanagan, man, I love Flanagan. That was the heartbreaker for me. I love that guy.
Yeah, that's been a real deal breaker for me in the aftermath of his death, of how I feel about it and a lot of it. And obviously, just them getting to the field, we're going to stand and applaud as they're going to play baseball this year. Dean, I hope that we get a crab cake at some point. Bring your poetry
up, sir.
And leave that Duke hat at home, dog. That doesn't play. You know that's not good. You want to get booed. Wear something Duke up here, Dean Smith.
All right. Thanks, man. Great to talk to you.
Great to Thanks. Talk to you, man. If I had known you a couple weeks ago, I'd have hit you when I came to Raleigh. We'd have been at the Barnyard Barn or whatever the heck that thing's
anytime,
called.
Anytime, anytime.
Having some cold beer. Dean Bartoli Smith, the book is Baltimore Sons from Stillhouse Press. You can Google him. It's Dean Smith from Durham. The Duke Dean Smith, not the North Carolina Dean Smith. We're having a good time around here. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is going to bring it all together. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt here, so I'm going to be getting the Fadleys next Wednesday, the 23rd. But for this week, we're going to be at Costas on the 18th, watching basketball with hopefully an eliminated. Maybe we could see Duke eliminated at Costas. Maybe that would be fun. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.